We will rally around Kurt Warner.
Kurt Warner.
You're a big horse, and you must be ridden every Monday night.
Two-time NFL MVP.
They talk about this, the greatest show on turf. Maybe the best offense ever in football.
Super Bowl champion.
Warner to throw. Going deep downfield. Adjusting for it is Isaac Bruce. Touchdown. 73 yards.
Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Not just the NFL Hall of Fame. And I wear that as a badge of honor because without pro football, in all its forms and fashions, I'm not here tonight.
Radio analyst for Westwood One Sports.
Touchdown, Caleb Williams.
And I love the way that Caleb Williams played. We know that he's a tremendous playmaker. The one thing that they wanted him to do was, hey, play the game on first and second down. When we need the play to be made, now go be special.
NFL Network analyst.
If it was one of your wide receivers who didn't necessarily go get it, would you be upset in the moment?
I don't think so on that one. I mean, okay. That wasn't one that I thought, oh, that should have been completed. You know, what were you doing, DJ? Like, I didn't think that. I just thought it was close and you know, we just missed.
Okay.
And they were there to make a play. I didn't see it the other way.
All right. So Torrey Holt and Isaac Bruce, they wouldn't put you in that position. We understand.
Kurt,
they probably would have been open by 7 yards. So,
that's right.
So I could have missed by 5 yards and we'd still be good.
Kurt Warner with Spiegel and Holmes.
The Bears.
On 670 The Score.
Our segment with Kurt Warner is sponsored by Plumbers 911 Plumbing Emergency. Call the plumbing professionals, available 24/7 at 1-833-PLUM-911. Kurt Warner joins us here on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Well, Kurt, every time we think the Bears can't top performance, they tend to top a performance. What was it like for you watching that game play out?
Well, I mean, on TV or on film? On TV, I mean, I just think it was crazy because we've kind of seen the story before, you know, but the way the Packers kind of dominated, and I won't say dominated. I actually thought that the Bears played pretty well offensively in the first half, even though it didn't turn into points. But, I mean, just the way that they jumped out early and had such a huge lead, and then to just – I mean, it is kind of amazing how the Bears so many times have just been able to flip that switch and, you know, when they need it and exactly when they need it and how much time's left that they're able to do what they did. I mean, it was pretty amazing, I think, on both sides. The way that the Bears kind of put it together defensively, they were getting after the Packers. They were winning the line of scrimmage in the second half. And then offensively, you guys know what happened and the different plays that they made and that Caleb made. And then on the other side, the Packers just, they didn't cover anybody in the second half. And offensively, they just all took their turns, you know, messing up here or there. And then obviously the kicker added a little bit to it. I mean, it was like a perfect storm in that second half with all the things that went bad for the Packers, all the things that went right for the Bears. And that's what it takes to make an epic comeback like that.
Kurt, as you watch the tape, what did you see in terms of the Bears' offense in that fourth quarter? Three touchdown drives, 66, 81, and 66. They took a maximum of 2.5 minutes. One was 230, one was 218, one was 108. What did you see on those three drives from Caleb and the Bears' offense?
Well, I think Ben is doing a great job of dialing up different things. You know, almost every play has a motion. I mean, even the run plays that they're kind of simulating pass plays on the other side of that. So even a guy that motions, or you have a receiver or a tight end on one side that wraps to the other side on the snap, it doesn't really even block anybody. He just releases and kind of goes to the flat as if they're going to run a naked bootleg or they're going to run some other type of pass play off of it. But all of that, you know, misdirection and eye candy and stuff is going on every single play. So I think he does a great job with that. You know, when it came to, you know, late in the game, it wasn't a bunch of, you know, dial up a crazy play that they don't expect. It was, let's call some good, solid pass plays and Caleb read it out and make the throws. And I think the beautiful thing about a situation like that is when you're in pass, you know, all the time type mode, you know, we've talked about it all year with Caleb. Caleb's not going to be perfect right now. He's not perfect in terms of his efficiency, but if you're going to give him three or four opportunities to make a big play, I like the odds. He's going to make some big plays. And that's what you saw in this game. There were some misses that you're like, oh, gosh, we need to have that one. But it doesn't really matter because it's like, okay, first down, okay, second down and 10. Okay, now it's third down and 10. All I need is one of these three plays, and I'll make one of those three for you. And he did that over and over in this game is, you know, he just find a way to make the big throw when they needed it. Of course, everybody's talking about that incredible fourth down play that probably was the difference in whether they could even win or if they were going to lose that game. But he just made so many of those plays, and it was just going back to kind of the basics, and he did a great job of reading it out. I thought this was one of his best games across the board, even though, again, not a lot of points in the first half. The interception, I don't know if they've talked about it there. I think that was a mess up on the outside by Burden, who threw his hand up, and I don't know if he knew what he was doing because he was running back and forth across the formation, and then I don't know if he saw an adjustment and threw his hand up or he wasn't sure what he was supposed to be doing. I think that was supposed to be one of their big in routes that we've talked about. They got down tight in the red zone a couple times, went for it, didn't get it. So that led to not a lot of points early. But I thought Caleb, you know, played a really good football game from, you know, from start to finish. You know, maybe some other pieces that went against him, but I thought he played a really good football game.
You know what we saw in that fourth quarter, Kurt, on those three drives, and that was great stuff right there from Kurt Warner. But we saw him making what seemed like good decision after good decision all the times. Just this year, we would ask you about how does he learn to just take the check down? And he checks down to DeAndre Swift at one point on a beautiful play on a third and four and gets great run after the catch, you know? It just using touch sometimes to Colston Loveland and then throwing a bullet to Loveland on the very next play, using different kinds of throws instead of just the fastball. It feels like, for me, I don't know if it always happens, but in this game, you saw like the full range of skills and reads calmly from him at the end. It was amazing to watch.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things that go on when I watch the tape, is that I would love to sit in a room with Ben and Caleb or just be a fly on the wall and watch this film, because there is a number of times where I ask myself, okay, what are they trying to do with this combination, this concept? There's other times I ask myself, Caleb, why are you looking over there? Like, what, you know, what, all that stuff. And so there's, you know, sometimes I wonder, okay, did he just happen to pick the right guy and the right guy was open and then obviously he delivered it? Was it a great read on that particular play? Because, again, it's kind of all over the board when I watch a game. And so I just want to know. I want to know what he's seeing, how these things are put together, where he's supposed to go with his eyes. And that would give me a better sense of, at this point in his career, where is he in terms of seeing, reading coverages, understanding what's good against what, you know, those kinds of things. Or if he's just out there more as a playmaker going, okay, I know this is the first read. If it's there, rip it. If it's not there, go create, find a check down. That's the kind of stuff I would be fascinated to know. But I agree with you. I think he played a good game in terms of, you know, where he should have gone on plays, he was going to those places. When he didn't see something, he was finding those check downs and getting a positive play, a completion, you know, making a short little run or a run around the side to a first down. I mean, I thought he managed the game extremely well. And then obviously, as he has all year, made those critical big plays. And there was a number of them, like you said, in that fourth quarter, the drives were so quickly because it was like 20-yard play, 20-yard play, and they're right there in the red zone and they're scoring. And so it was fun to watch. And as we've said kind of all year, is that I don't think this is a finished product by any means. And so what they've done, what they've accomplished, it's just so exciting because I just go, okay, where can they go? How good can Caleb be? How much more efficient? If he can get more efficient to go along with this stuff, man, it's going to be fun to watch for years to come.
When the Bears drafted Colston Loveland, there were a lot of people like, oh, that's interesting, because Ty Warren was kind of thought to be the better choice at tight end. He fits perfectly, at least from my point of view, what it is that Ben is trying to do. Watching his growth has been unreal. How would you assess how Colston Loveland has become kind of a matchup problem for defenses?
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about Warren versus Loveland, I think they're two different players. And although I love Tyler Warren and what he's done, he's not quite the athlete that Loveland is. And I think that, to me, is probably why you go Loveland in this offense versus Warren. And you already had Cole Kmet, who is more of the bigger, more traditional type tight end. Now we want a guy that can be ultra versatile. And, you know, again, even though Warren does a lot of things, he's not as fluid and as explosive and as quick twitch as a guy like Loveland. And so, you know, you're seeing Loveland, you know, in the backfield. You're seeing, you know, him line up as a traditional tight end. You're seeing him all the way outside. You're seeing him motioning all over. And it can run so much of the route tree that to me is where he becomes such a vital piece. This is not just a good tight end. We wanted a chess piece. And he becomes that chess piece that doesn't have to do all the traditional tight end stuff, although I think he can do most of it. He could be that second tight end that becomes that mismatch for us, whether we put him in the backfield and he plays like a fullback or he plays like a running back and we use running back routes with him, or we put him on the outside and we use him more as a wide receiver type. He can do all of those things. So I think he's the ultimate chess piece for Ben and what Ben wants to do, you know, in this offense.
If we flip to the other side, what did you see from Jordan Love in the second half as Dennis Allen got very aggressive, bringing pressure, and some different players in the middle because of injury were able to go after him in the A-gap, right there in the middle? I wonder what you saw from Love as that was happening.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought the Packers just across the board, they're like everybody took their turn. There were times that there were scheme issues. Like there was one time they ran a play action pass and the left tackle stepped down and let the defensive end run free right at Jordan Love when they're right there on the his heels are on the goal line. And so it was stuff like that where it was like, what are you doing, Packers? There's other times where I just thought they were trying to push the ball down the field and take these double moves. And Jordan Love was forcing some things down the field. They were more aggressive. Chicago was defensively. So they forced a little more air, you know, in terms of having to be perfect because they were playing tight coverage. You know, there's one inside fade that he's trying to throw and the defender and the receiver's feet get, you know, caught up and he goes down to the ground and there's no penalty. And, you know, it's just like everything that could have gone and needed to go in the favor of the Bears did the second half. And again, part of it was to their credit. They won at the line of scrimmage. They, you know, that they were physical with the receivers. But I think a lot of it was also the Packers I just scratched my head. Like it was a quarterback one time. It was a play call. Like what are we doing with this play call here? Like, why are we doing this? Why aren't we handing the football off at like, there was just a whole bunch of stuff that you're just like, they needed everything to go against them and the Bears needed about everything to go for them. And, you know, again, the amazing part was I remember there was like 3 minutes to go in the third quarter and they went for it. I think that was when he threw the interception on fourth down. And, you know, I tweeted like, can't we just take points? Like just take 3 points. And everybody's like, oh, you can't take 3 points at that point. You know, at that point we, you know, we're down, you know, three scores or two scores of time, whatever it was. And I'm like, there is so much time left in this game. Like, just take some points. Get the positive, right? And then you just flip it. You get points again, and you're right back into this thing with the whole fourth quarter to go. And you guys know, I mean, they've scored so many points and were so explosive in the fourth quarter that they gave the ball back to the Packers with a minute and a half to go, and they had the lead. And so there is just so much time left in that game that it was just incredible to see how, you know, drive after drive, you know, whether it was – you know, Packer side or the Bear side, everything that needed to be done for the Bears, they did it. And where they needed a mess up from the Packers or a bad situation from the Packers, they did it. And, you know, it turned into this epic performance and a great game to watch.
When I watch Stafford and McVay, I look and go, I hope that's what ends up happening with Ben and Caleb. I feel like I'm watching two guys that have the same mind when I watch the Rams play offensive football. And I know that you watched that meltdown in Atlanta a couple weeks ago, but I'd love to know what you think of their relationship and how it manifests to the Rams playing winning football.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it numerous times on here, is that it's so important for your play designer, play caller, coach, to see the game the way that your quarterback does. And to, you know, so you kind of speak the same language, or when he designs a play and I guess goes through his progressions, you know, this is how I want you to read it, that it makes sense to the quarterback, that he knows, okay, perfect. I know what I'm going to do. I know who I'm looking at. I know why this progression, I know where this is going to happen and the timing of this and how my footwork can, like, you want all of that to be on the same page. So it's not just like a coach going, oh, I really like this play, here, run it. And the quarterback's going, oh my gosh, I don't know what we're trying to do here. I don't know how it makes sense. I don't really know how I'm supposed to go from here to, like, when there's that confusion, then, you know, you're not going to be nearly as successful. When you see it and understand it the same way is when you have those opportunities to kind of take it to the next level. And when a coach calls a play, you know exactly what and why he's thinking that particular play, and you could go out and you feel comfortable running it, and now you're executing at a high level. And so that's, to me, when you've got the best. I mean, I look at like Kyle Shanahan and Brock Purdy, is that I think the Shanahan system is tough to run. It's not an easy system that always lines up the way I see the game. But Brock, you know, has a way of making that offense work, and making certain kinds of throws and understanding the elements that go into making it great. And so, you know, where that offense, I don't think is as great without Brock Purdy. You know, Brock, you know, just because of his skill set, is able to thrive in that. So it's a perfect fit and mix with those two guys. And I think that's exactly what you're talking about and what you're looking for. You know, if especially if you've got a young quarterback and kind of a guy that's got that genius mind like Ben Johnson.
Can we ask you about the fourth, the last touchdown in the fourth quarter to DJ Moore, where they've kind of faked that wide receiver screen to Burden? You mentioned eye candy earlier. They had Darnell Wright, the right tackle, lined up on the left side in a tight end spot just to make it look even heavier. And then Darnell Wright, like, runs at the trio of wide receivers. I mean, that just, it seemed like wonderful design, and there's DJ Moore wide open after he faked a block on the wide receiver screen. What'd you think of that one, Kurt?
Yeah, I mean, I've actually seen that a couple times this year from a couple different teams. I'd never seen that before where they pull the offensive lineman outside to make it look like they are running the wide receiver screen and that tunnel screen where you try to get wrapped back underneath those offensive linemen. So I've seen a couple teams do that this year, and I think it's awesome because it's just an extra sell over there. You know, they'd run a number of wide receiver screens in the game out of different looks. And so, I mean, just a perfect play call. We've seen that a couple times. We saw that against the Packers in their last game, right? The perfect play call at the perfect time. You're just kind of waiting to pull it out of the bag when you needed it. And, you know, Ben's just had a way and a knack of doing that. And it was perfect execution. And the Packers, you know, all three of the DBs jumped all over it. You couldn't get probably an easier look for the game-winning touchdown. But I think Ben's done a great job of setting those things up all year long and then calling it at the right time.
Yeah, Lawrence Caleb said they'd practiced it for the last month but hadn't run it in any of those games. Man, that's
pretty crazy. Yeah. Kurt, as always, we appreciate this. Thanks so much for joining us. It's great to be in January and still talking to you about actual games and not about draft stuff. So it's cool.
No kidding. We got at least one more week. I love it. I love it. Let's go see what can happen.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks, Kurt.
You got it. Talk to you guys later.
It's Kurt Warner who joins us every Monday. He breaks stuff down for us on Plumbers 911 Football Monday, presented by Busey Bank. Ben Devine, who covers the Bears, I saw this tweet from him. Caleb had 11 explosive plays in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
That's the most ever in NFL history.
Yeah, you know, it's like, here's the thing. It's insane. As we talk about, like, Caleb's completion percentage, I've come to realize
it doesn't matter as much.
It doesn't, because he goes down the field so much.
Yep.
Ben goes down the field so much. Their average depth of target is top three in the NFL. Big game hunter. And I saw a bunch of different people on social media make the comp to the modern NBA, where you're better off shooting 35% from three-point land than you are 45% from two-point land.
So you're saying he's Steph Curry?
He's Steph Curry, or he's James Harden, although he's definitely more entertaining than James Harden. Let's say Steph Curry, because they both chew on the mouth guard like that, too.
Yeah, that's actually I like that.
Right? And so the idea is like, all right, so he's 50%. I certainly find myself caring about it less. He throws the ball away happily. That kid dirts the ball whenever he needs to. There's also been some drops. And again, he's money down the field, which was the missing piece for the first half of this season.
Yes, it was figuring it out, and then boom. That 11 explosive plays in a quarter
is insane.
Is absurd. And I went back through the game log, and like, they're there.
Yeah.
Like, it's really, really unbelievable that in playoff history that hasn't happened. It's wild stuff. So we need to take a break. And we've had our say. We would like for you to have yours. And Janet, if you're out there, we would like to hear from you too. 312-644-6767 is the number. You watched the Bears beat the Packers in a playoff game.
Yeah, you did. And like, we all had these experiences. I want to know what their experiences were, because every person that I talked to was like, let me tell you about me watching that game and what happened when I believed, when I didn't believe, and then what happened at the end. Like, what was your experience feeling that win?
Yeah, there are a lot of people that probably walked out and are going to say they never lost faith. There are a lot of places that emptied out at halftime, and then it was like, oh, look at that. The Bears won. Now we're going to shoot off fireworks and stuff that sounds like fireworks. We are taking your phone calls today of all days. The Bears have moved on, and they moved right through the Packers to do it. 312-644-6767 is the number. Spiegel and Holmes talking to you, the Bears fan, next on The Score.
I think the post game in the locker room with Caleb Williams presenting the game ball to Ben Johnson, to me, summed it up. And where this team is, where that quarterback and this head coach are, they've put not only the division on notice, but the entire NFC. And if he could piece together a full game versus the second half, they are going up.
Howie Long was feeling what the Bears were doing. And he's probably one of the, I would say Howie is an early adopter nationally. He's the one that gave you the Caleb is Elway comp. And he stood on business when it came to talking about it. It was a crazy game that put people through a lot of emotion, Speaks.
Yeah.
And seeing how people consumed it was awesome.
Yeah, I was over at Fox getting ready to do post game.
By the way, I meant to tell you this in the pre-show and I didn't, and I apologize. You were amazing on their post game show, man. You looked good. When they came out of a clip and I saw you turn to the camera, I was like, my man is on it. He is on it. Lou didn't even need to tee you up. You just went.
I mean, that's what it's like to do post. It's such a thrill to process it in real time, to feel all that stuff and be like, I think I'm just going to deliver it. But like, thank you for that. But as we're watching the game, people were not believing. And this team has conditioned me to believe. Maybe I'm prone to it anyway, as just my makeup, but with 6.5 minutes or whatever it was, down 11, everybody was freaking out, and I'm like, they got time to do this. They got all kinds of time to do this.
I think I've been conditioned too, because there was a moment for me at the beginning of the third quarter where I was like, you know, I could probably make that flight thing now if I wanted to. And then I was like,
Ben told you not to do it.
And I was like,
you got 5 weeks not to make that flight arrangement.
And I was like, no, I'm not going to. It doesn't make sense to do it, because they'll rally back and do something. Even if they lose, like, they'll rally back.
Yeah.
So I didn't.
Good. So we want to hear your experience of watching that. Did you believe? I mean, look, they've told you that they believe in themselves. Did you at that point in the fourth quarter or whenever you felt the push to give up?
Let's get after it. Hey, Mike, you're on The Score.
Hey, thank you, guys. First of all, love your show. Been listening for many years. You guys are doing a great job. My story is, my daughter and I were at the game, and we were in the first row of the north end zone. And so we had great seats, but my daughter is a Packer fan. So she was wearing her Packers hat, Packers jersey, and I'm a Bears fan, but we wanted to go to the game. I have not seen Caleb Williams play live yet, and I thought this was going to be a perfect opportunity. So great game, great vantage point. I started to believe that they were going to win when the Bears defense started shutting down the Packers in the second half. And I knew something special was going to happen. But at halftime, you know, the Bears were up by, I mean, the Packers were up by so much, my daughter and I walked around the whole stadium. And I was worried people were going to be, you know, mean, cruel to her. It wasn't. It was a great atmosphere. There were some comments that were all fun, good-natured. But I felt like I had to cheer up the other fans when they saw my daughter in Packers gear. It's almost like they were getting down. I said, hey, the Bears are going to come back. This is going to be two different halves. We got Ben Johnson. We got Caleb Williams. We could turn it around. We get back to our seats, and then the fourth quarter happens right in front of us. It was amazing. And again, people kept asking me where I went wrong as a parent, how I ended up with a daughter who's a Packer fan, but it was all fun. But when,
hold on. That's a great story. It's a great story. My only question is, where did you go wrong as a parent?
Yeah, we are all trying to figure it out.
Yeah, man, it doesn't make any damn sense. But I'm glad you had a good time and everybody was nice to you. I mean, that's amazing. The Packers were 5-for-7 on third down and 3-for-3 in the red zone in the first half. And then in the second half, 1-for-8 on third down.
Tight.
Something changed. They ran it 7 times for 6 yards in the second half.
Can I tell you how you avoid that as a parent?
As a parent, yeah.
So we were going to a brunch on Saturday morning. Great planning. Love going to a nice brunch with my wife's friends on the day of Bears Packers.
Yeah, but
I was a real treat, as you can imagine.
You were like me. You were pissy with your family.
At least it was a late game. Okay?
No, for sure. But it's not like I was not nervous the entire time. But so the wife was getting ready, and my daughter is 11. She's at the age where, like, they sometimes they go matchy-matchy, you know, mother-daughter thing. And, you know, they start picking out a green tops. And I'm like, no, we're not wearing any green today. And my daughter has no idea, like, where is this coming from? And I had to explain to her, not during Bears Packers. No one's wearing green in my house today.
Good, good.
None of the 75 shades of green.
Thank you, Alex, for paying attention.
Right, that's
during categories
of
lime, hey, avocado, forest.
People,
none of them.
People were mad at Coach last week because Coach had on a really nice, like, green and yellow and white shirt. And people were like, hey, what's up with that?
Yeah.
I think it was a green and white shirt and a yellow tie. Yeah. But he also had on a navy vest.
Yeah, it was pit colors. He's got to learn.
We got to re-educate Coach. That's a thing. Hey, Joe, you're on the score.
Joe. Hey, thanks for taking a call. And Spiegs, you were tremendous on the post-game show, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, I learned the hard way not to doubt the Bears. Back, if you remember, in the Bengal game, when I thought all was lost, I did something silly. I threw my remote, didn't realizing I was aiming right at the TV set, and I destroyed it. So I didn't see the amazing comeback. Fast forward to Saturday night. My neighbor, who's from Naperville, and we live in Wisconsin, behind the Cheddar Curtain, he's got a flagpole. He always has the Packer flag above the Bear flag and the Bear flag upside down.
Oh.
So at halftime, he came out and ran it up. So I saw that. Because I had my dog, walking my dog. I went over and knocked on the door, and I said, are you sure about that? I said, the Bears are a second-half team. They might come back. He said, no way. No way. They're done. He said, book that. So at the end of the game, I came over to his house, knocked on the door. I said, are you going to take that flag down, or am I? And he goes, I ain't taking it down, dude. Wait till next year. I said, yeah, that's what you guys got this year.
Uh-huh.
So I went over to his flagpole, and I cut the rope and took the Bear flag.
He's like that lady in South Carolina. Right. Was what? That Daniel Van Kirk doing a bit?
I know, that wasn't real, was it? That was amazing. He cut the rope and took the flag. I thought he was going to have his dog do something in that guy's house, didn't you?
He literally captured the flag. Good for him. That is...
The upside down Bears flag, not the Bears in distress.
Yeah, it's like what some Supreme Court justice would do.
Yeah, everything's in turmoil. Hey, Matt, you're on the score.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Oh, we're good, Matt.
Things are good, man. What's on your mind?
Oh, man, had the best moment. I had my 8-year-old boy with me. We were at a buddy's house, and at halftime, we said, okay, buddy, you've never stayed up for an entire game. Here's the risk. You could have the best moment of your Bears life, or it could be a tough playoff reality. He said, let's stay. And, man, it was awesome. We were jumping up and down. He had his little Doomsday jersey on.
Wow.
And I think we probably got his first real, like, core memory.
Oh, we love it. Oh, there you are. Man. Awesome. Oh, you're breaking
that's
up on us.
Beautiful,
it's
though.
Really beautiful.
Oh, man, that's the stuff. He's never going to forget that. His entire life, he won't forget that. That's what it's about. Good job letting him stay up, man.
I agree wholeheartedly with that. How about we continue with this? I like this. And I like where it's going. 312-644-6767. You are Janet. Janet is you.
Unless we can find Janet. But
I feel like Janet is
she's
been
all of us.
Partying for the last day and a half.
I dream of Janet and the light brown hair. Now, I dream of Janet not needing to drive to Chicago to watch the games in the future. Now she can just stay up there and have her vibes so elite that they transfer to those people.
I couldn't stop laughing thinking about her after the game ended. Like, after I had finished House of L, my video for the score, I just thought, I was like, I bet Janet is happy right now. And I knew that Bears fans were happy. Speaks, I'm not kidding. There were the gunshots, the fireworks, people stopping in their cars,
man,
honking their horns, folks getting out of their cars and dancing.
It's the best.
It's really great. And you know what I think about? Like, I've always said that Chicago is the biggest small town. Like, everyone's kind of connected to everyone else. Like, you know a guy that knows a guy that knows that. We all know the Pope. Saturday felt like a college town. Like, that's the reaction that we're getting from people.
Yeah.
It's like that. That's when we are our most collegiate, is when the Bears are good.
And the city deserves it. Like, I feel like we as a fan base, after the decades of dealing with the crap, we deserve this joy and euphoria. So glad it gets to keep going.
Yes. Let's take more of your phone calls. 312-644-6767. The Bears are moving on. The Packers are moving out of their lockers. We're discussing it here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes show flashback.
Let's go to Milwaukee and talk with Janet. Hey, Janet, you're on The Score.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Originally from Chicago, but live in Milwaukee now, and it would just be horrendous if the Bears lose. Dealing with the Packers, living here in Packerland, I would suffer. And I'm normally happy-go-lucky, but I wouldn't be.
I'm Spartacus. We're all just one big Rhythm Nation for Janet. And we're happy for Janet today.
Imagine Janet doing the Rhythm Nation choreography.
Yeah.
Out here dancing in the streets of Milwaukee, like, who won it?
Yeah.
Who won it?
I bet she got so excited after that game, did Janet, that there was a wardrobe malfunction. It's just my guess.
Now you made it weird.
Now?
Yeah, just now? What's the past year plus been?
Come on, man. Just now. I'm sad that I haven't made it weird before this. My God.
This guy. Maybe Karen from the north side can help us out.
Help
or Northbrook
us out, Karen, for
can
God's
help
sake.
Us out. Hey, Karen, you're on The Score.
Hi, Karen.
Hey, guys. I really think that this is something we should talk about. First of all, great show. I listen to you guys all the time. But I want to talk about the Bregman announcement and the timing of it, because I feel like Bregman is the new rain delay. And it came out.
Tanny's upset. He's very. He doesn't want to
let her cook. Let her go.
Bears today.
I see where Karen's going on this. I see it. Okay, go ahead, Garrett.
Well, okay, so because we're a very superstitious family. So like we were watching it, the four of us at our house, and like things are not going well. When the things weren't going well last game, I had to go upstairs and like take a deep breath. This time, my son Eli went upstairs. He comes running down that we have Bregman now. We're kind of like, what? Like, we were like, so the entire city is like all Bears. And all of a sudden we get this like Cubs announcement and the game shifts. We tell Eli to go back upstairs. He's not allowed to come back downstairs. Now the Bears are like, things are going our way, right? Uh-huh. I mean, and the more we kept on thinking about it, I was like, is this the rain delay that made the shift in the universe in the same way that it did in game 7? And like, I just thought it was like, it can't be coincidental. I think everyone in Chicago might be putting 2 and 2 together, or it might just be me, but I just thought it was a fascinating, you know, kind of antidote to the whole Saturday night game.
It's a wonderful idea. It's a wonderful story. I will say this, it is as massive a shift what the Cubs did as the Bears now being better than the Packers, because Tom Ricketts now has shown you he's going to spend, that he did. You can't say he's not going to anymore. That is a big time change. And maybe the Bears felt that repercussion in the force, my friends.
Sorry, excuse me, waiter. I usually don't do this, so, but there's Cubs in my Bears. Can we send this back?
I understand.
I ordered Bears.
Yeah, I understand.
A 708 texter would like a minute to rebut, and he says, listen, as a Sox fan, who are you actually going to thank for the Bears win? Alex damn Bregman or the bleeping Pope?
Thank you.
Yeah, and A.J. Pierzynski was at the Bears game.
Generally, state of the world up or down since that rain delay in November of 2016.
Well, it's a tough one. It's a tough one. It's a good call.
Mike in the battleground area of Lake Geneva. Oh, hey, boy. Mike, you're on the score.
How you doing, Mike? You surviving right now?
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah, dude. All I got to do is put my Bears gear on, and I don't have to say a word. You know? Shut these people up.
Yes! Yes! Yes, you're the king!
Last night, or Saturday night, I was here at my house, and I usually watch the game outdoors on my porch, game conditions, and I went fourth quarter. I decided, you know what? We need to change the juju, and I had a couple friends in the middle of a Packer bar, and I went downtown, and they had just scored, and they were down by 11 or whatever. Hmm. And I'm like, I'm going to go downtown and either take abuse or watch these people crumble.
Wow.
And we all know how that happened. And there was a lot of silence in that room and a lot of people playing, spending a lot of good money playing. The Bears still suck while I'm pointing at the scoreboard.
Oh, wow. Wow. So you know what you did? You steered into the skid, which as a driver is what you are told to do. It feels counterintuitive.
But that's how you recontrol the car.
That's what he did. He steered directly into it. Good job, Mike.
Speaks. This is like for people who didn't understand what I was saying during transition, this is what I mean. If they win the Super Bowl, yeah, that's a bigger thing, obviously. But this time in between,
yes,
this was people's Super Bowl. Oh. And now we have it confirmed now. Hmm. Like people just kind of sitting back quiet, like waiting for it to play out. All of these stories that you're hearing let you know how Bears fans felt about this whole thing.
If you have a Packers fan in your life, that's a friend, and they every time the Bears play the Packers and they say, oh, congrats on your Super Bowl, you know?
Yeah.
But now this kind of was like the Super Bowl.
Thank you very much.
It felt like the Super Bowl all day around the city.
One team is definitely closer to the Super Bowl after this past weekend.
Tell you what, we're still thinking about a possible Super Bowl. You guys are having exit interviews, seeing if your new president, Ed Policy, is going to keep your coach.
We had turned the page industry, by the way. I think we should delay turning the page
Friday
fully. Not Friday, but I was thinking Thursday would be a good time to turn it.
I understand. There's so much to break down here. I want to do 6 hours today.
I just, no, you don't.
I did. Before
at one point.
At one point, that was actually how I felt.
Yeah.
I still feel that way.
Tell the people why you want to do 6 hours today.
Well, I'm off the next 2 days.
We'll see. There you go.
Well, you know why, though? It's because Wednesday is both my wife and my son's birthday. It's hell week, okay? This is the most challenging week of my life.
Didn't Mike Florio warn you about this years ago?
Yeah, don't time your pregnancies to end up with children in the NFL playoffs. He did.
Don't marry a woman who was born in January. Mike Florio told you about this.
I didn't listen. I've stopped listening to Florio since I'm doing afternoons.
We need to take a break. This silliness is going to continue throughout the show because you deserve it. You know what we get to do now? Talk about sad Packers and sad Packer announcer.
It's about time.
The dagger.
The dagger.
Yeah. Hooray.
More arrogance by Matt Nagy.
No.
No.
Nope.
Maybe from you, Wayne.
Yep. He learned it from you. Back after this on The Score.